up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 29. Dow Futures up 213 as the rally continues on there. NASDAQ is actually up today after being down many days in a row. So we've had this kind of flip around, and we're heading back the other way here. So we'll see. We've got all kinds of stuff happening as we... As we obviously know, we're trying to go through most of it for you. We still have the vaccine is going to solve everything, even though I'm not so sure when the timing of that is. Nobody seems to know. But we also know that an awful lot of good stuff came flying out with the timing somewhat suspicious, I'd say. Kevin, what do you think?
Oh, I don't know. It's kind of odd, although I don't know why that company in particular would want to torpedo Trump, but it is suspicious. You know, it was funny when what was it in one of the debates, the second debate, when Trump said we're weeks away from having a vaccine, and he got pretty well mocked for it.
Yeah, mocked, and
we're weeks away, or seemingly weeks away from having a vaccine that, you know, would be the one that gets one, or the first one that gets distributed.
I know the whole world has managed to meet themselves, or get themselves into a situation where if they like somebody or they like a party, everything that happens good for them, no matter how screwed up it is okay, and everything bad happens to the other guys is okay. But, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm one of the... I don't want to get a homer call on my side in softball, and I don't want the other guys getting one on their side. Let's just keep it fair, as Rodney said, you know.
And, yeah, the strike zone should be the same for everybody.
And I don't see that happening. I had a beverage last night outside for a while here, and the guy says, "Well, he pissed those pharmaceutical places off. Of course, they were going to torpedo him." I said, "Well, didn't the man say, probably without any, who knows if he had any background for it, that we're going to have a vaccine in November?" And the guy was vilified by every single place that could possibly write a story. Now here it is, November, and it's the best thing that happened to humanity. The greatest thing in 100 years, better than polio, better than smallpox, you name it, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to humanity, and we're a year away. And I wish it was tomorrow, and I hope it works, but I mean, what are we doing here? Do they think the memory of the populace is, as they used to say, do they think we have the brain of a gnat, if that? I mean, they must.
Well, they must, but you know, my view on it is that once the minds are made up, you know, we find news that supports the way we think.
But what's the good book?
And so for most people, it's you know, you almost have the la la la, I can't hear you routine going on, where you know, you're going to hear what you want to hear, you're going to not hear what you don't want to hear, and that's just the way it is. If it's reported accordingly, you know, they are for the most part preaching to the choir.
I think that it's a long run bad situation. I mean, I don't. And then I was listening to Kamala Harris last night. This is going to be tough for me for 4 years. But did you know that
she's got a little bit of Fran Drescher, you know, just a tinge of that Fran Drescher voice, doesn't she?
Well, I don't know that if those. on the show who voted for Biden know that you absolutely, every single one of you voted for essentially a single payer insurance system. I don't know if anybody thought they were doing that to you. I just, you know. Anyway, this idea of telling people why they voted for somebody, this is a time-honored tradition. Remember when, I actually like the guy because I've talked to him a bunch of times, but he never was much of a politician because I think he was probably too clean. Who was the guy before Rauner, Manny, the governor? Got it.
Quinn.
I mean, when he won by what, 4 votes and came in and he had a mandate? I'm like, gee, you do? what about the millions of people who voted against you? Right, I got a mandate. Don't worry about it. I'm like, all right, knock yourself out. I just, you know.
You got a mandate from the people who voted for you. You don't have a mandate from the populace, though.
No. So it's like,
hey, before we get any farther and I forget, we have quite a few vets, a few veterans who are in the listening audience, and it's Veterans Day, and I think we should give them a big salute and thank them for serving the country.
How many people remember, maybe why don't you dig this up, when did we change from Armistice Day to Veterans Day? I'm going to say we were in high school, Kevin.
Could have been. Not sure.
Because I think, and Maddie's going to check this for me and tell me I'm wrong, wasn't the armistice the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month? In World War One? That sound right?
Devilish about that.
Doesn't that sound right?
That is quoted here. It says Armistice Day is commemorated every year on November 11th to mark the armistice signed between the Allies of World War One and Germany for the cessation of hostilities on the Western Front of World War One, which took effect at 11 o'clock in the morning, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month.
Yeah,
and when 1918.
And when did it go to Veterans Day? Because obviously, for those that don't remember, nobody was around. Although there are people still getting checks for World War One. There's actually a lady getting a check from Civil War, from the government. Because you're, in those days, when you croaked, your benefits went to your kids. Even though but somehow or another, Kevin, they never, I don't know what war started it, but those don't get any, cost of living increase. I think the lady who's getting the last check from Civil War is like $14. It's really strange. It was a very snowy day when Lou turned me on to that, so I spent about an hour on a computer research, and it's pretty fascinating. There's still people getting it from, like, the war against Pancho Villa and things like that. But anyway, the guy who, Civil War vet, fathered 2 or 3 daughters when he was in his 80s. That was before Viagra, for God's sake. Just saying, you know. The guy went to the 70s.
Hey, when you think of our generation and how much stuff we've messed up, we at least can claim that we gave the world Viagra.
My uncle.
By the way, Armistice Day became Veterans Day on June 1st, 1954.
54. Okay, well, way before high school.
Before I was born, actually, by a couple.
Way before Webby. So my uncle used to say, "You know, if we're not careful, the way we're going to screw up sex." Was he right or what? All the new diseases and everything. Like, oh, well. Anyway, I listened to I forget her name, I shouldn't, but the Fed representative, the Fed governor from San Francisco. Kevin, I don't think I've ever wanted to walk into a room so much in my life and say, I want everybody's ass in this briefcase before I leave, like Wilford Brimley. She starts talking about all these various tools and this and that and how now they think one of their things is to fight COVID. Where is that in their charter? Just saying.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's there. Doesn't it say there, right there in the third article where it says you have to fight COVID-19?
Yeah. I've, one of my, best buddies who's been very careful the whole way, all of a sudden he calls me yesterday and he goes, hey, I just tested positive for COVID. And I said, "Well,
welcome to that club."
Yeah, and he says, I said, "By the way, do you have a cold?" He goes, "Yeah." For full disclosure, 2 weeks ago I had a procedure scheduled, so I had to go get a COVID test, and I tested positive. And that's why I was at home last week, quarantining. And I had no symptoms, but I did have a cold. So my doctor calls me, and he says to me, I said, well, doc, what's going on? I mean, all of a sudden, everybody's testing positive. He goes, that's a real good question. He goes, in the last 7 to 10 days, we haven't had to cancel any procedures, and all of a sudden, we're canceling everything. He goes, that's not my field. He said, but I'm just thinking that one of two things is happening. There's a cold going around, and most colds are not COVID colds. He'd named some other long term that I can't remember. He said, but I'm thinking that these tests are getting so positive that this COVID cold is going around is tripping the tests. Because everybody, or not everybody, just about everybody who's being tested positive, you call them up and they say, what are you talking about? I feel fine. I just got this little cold. He said, or the disease is continuing to become probably more contagious and less virulent. He says, but we're talking about 7 to 10 days, so it's hard to imagine that happening in 7 to 10 days because clearly something has changed. We're not talking about a gradual ramp up or anything like that. And he says the idea that all of a sudden, you know, everybody's having dinner at home like the governor's saying or any of that kind of crap, is that just didn't happen in the last week. Something happened, and nobody seems to know what it is. And I don't think we'll ever get, whatever the story is, Kevin, we'll never get the straight story because it doesn't match somebody's politics, whoever it is. I mean, something's going on. All of a sudden, everybody's positive, and doesn't appear that most of them have any symptoms. I mean, something's weird. Now,
you know how I keep talking about data versus information.
Yeah.
The step after information is knowledge, and we aren't nearly into the knowledge phase anyway. So, what you're talking about is that if we were to start measuring how many people come in with cold symptoms and what definitely appears to be a cold and get a positive test and start studying in there, then we would start, by organizing that data, we'd get some information out of it. But now the question, the knowledge question, is the same thing as what trips T-cells in so many cases, is why? And we aren't close to that.
No, and I know for me, they said, okay, when's the first day I can go for an antibody test? They said, this Friday, 9 o'clock, I'm going to be there. I want to know if I had it or not. I mean, obviously, if I did, and I had no symptoms, I guess I'm one of the lucky ones. If I didn't, well, then, I'm right back where I started from, and I didn't have to stay home for 10 days. And as of now, it's a total toss-up as to whether I got a fake positive or whether I actually had it.
We know that there are a lot of people who are testing, without symptoms anyway.
Right.
And so when now we start piling on there and say, out of those, how many is it because what we consider a positive test on the PCR test that is, that's pretty well documented that it's overly, we honor the sensitivity at a much lower level than necessary. How much of it is that then?
Well, if you listen to, well, at least my physician, I said, do I need to go in for any more tests? He said, no. He said, this is interesting. He said, just stay home for 10 days, and if you don't have any symptoms and you feel fine, you're fine. I said, well, don't I need another test? He goes, no, you don't want another test. I said, how come? He goes, well, unbeknownst to what you're hearing on the radio and TV, he says, if you actually have it, these tests are so sensitive, they're going to be picking you up as a positive for as many as 30 to 45 days, even though you're no danger to yourself or anybody else. But you're not going to get rid of every single shred of busted up RNA from COVID in 10 days. But your body will be on top of it. You have no symptoms. You can't give it to anybody else. And, oh, by the way, you're okay for a while. Nobody knows quite how long. Which I think is what we've been saying the whole time. He said, but don't think for a second. So these people that run back 4 days later and all of a sudden get this negative test after they, quote, already have it, I don't think that's true at all, Kevin, from what I hear. Because I've checked this out with three other people that I know have had it and what their doctors told them. There's a big difference between what people are being told by physicians and what you're hearing on the radio and TV, it appears.
Oh, yeah, and I have that same experience with my own doctor. Not what he's telling me about me specifically, but when I've been in for a checkup and we talk about you know, we just talk about the situation in general. Yeah, he's definitely in that that mode there. That that this is that it's not. Well, let's put it this way: that it's not being reported accurately. That's probably as nice as I can be about it.
Now the question is why and when who's behind? I mean, is it just the media is just so anxious for a story? I mean, I listen to, you know, I don't think they do a bad job. I listen to News Radio 78. I mean, everybody does, because if you're driving, you're going to get your traffic every 10 minutes, and you're going to get the sports. You're going to find out what's going on in the world basically in 20 minutes. And that's what the station is all about. But they'll land a story. How it makes itself to the top of the list, or even CNBC or in these other places, they'll pick one that sometimes seems to have no basis to any doesn't seem anybody cares about any of it, and it'll just lead for a whole weekend. And they just... And then everybody will start talking about it. But it could have been any one of 50 stories of the same import. I just don't know I mean, I got to believe that the editorial staff and on Walter Cronkite, when you had a half-hour news show and you had to jam all the real news, sports and weather and everything else into a half-hour, that the idea of what stories get in there and don't had to be a real big deal. It's like what in a newspaper. If you've ever... I was in my high school newspaper for a little bit, and... the idea of what got on the front page of the Tribune every day. I mean, have you ever seen those old movies about the newspapers? They were like all true, Kevin. I mean, the amount of stuff, just this article's too big, cut it down, it can't fit on the front page. The idea of getting only the best stuff, the most important stuff in the first two or three pages, and what constituted that. Is that totally a lost art when you've got 24 hours to just plain fill up with crap?
Well, yeah, you have to fill it up with crap, but then you also have to go back and say, okay, why? What's pushing the whole COVID story? And one of the things to consider there is that that there are a lot of people who benefit from it the way it is now, the way it's reported now. There are a whole lot of people that benefit from that, and there are losers on that.
But Kevin, what is
so, you know, what's your nexus there? So when it comes to the Washington Post, you know darn well what it is. The same guy who owns the Washington Post it also owns Amazon. So there's a total conflict there. But you know, you have to start asking yourself, what's the conflict elsewhere too? How much of it is political? How much of it is simpler than that? That it's business related. Investment related, I don't know the answer to that.
Well, but I don't understand. I'm always wondering. Being this is my unfortunate South Side mentality, and maybe you'll give me cramp about. But yeah, I'm always worried about. I'm not worried about it. I'm always curious as to the process, and what is the quid pro quo. I mean, I know that on a trading floor. Not saying I would ever do something like this, but there were always in the OEX pit, there were a couple of quote reporters that if they weren't there, it would cost you a fortune. Or if you're looking for the quarter, you know, if you're at a quarter and there's a quarter bid someplace and you're looking, they'll find the other quote reporter and they'll find out who was the quarter bid and they'll point the guy out to you because it was such a big pit. Now, a couple of these, well, guys and ladies, they were worth, you know, and we're not doing anything untoward. It's me finding the best bid or the best offer because I'm trying to sell it or buy it. So, in fact, it would help the customer out. But I also know that they were exchange employees and that the maximum for a gift for the year was supposed to be $25. I also know that I never was in this line. Couldn't possibly have been me. I also know that there were people in line at the Harris Bank getting many Benjamins on Christmas Eve. And at the end of the day, the Benjamins were gone. Now, we're not talking about paying somebody off. We're talking about somewhat of a quid pro quo for somebody going beyond what their job is and helping people out. And, oh, by the way, helping customers out, because that means that person didn't have to pay 3/8 because I found them and I sold them at a quarter or the other way around. So it was, if ever was, I hate to turn the word win-win, but if ever there was a win-win-win for everybody, it was me, the guy I traded with, and, oh, by the way, the customer who was on the other side of the order that the guy was representing. So there's a mechanism. But I wonder when I see these guys from Pfizer in this very obvious timing, I'll say not obvious, curious timing thing, what exactly is the quid pro quo from the Biden administration? Is it totally hands off on any prescription drug pricing problems for 4 years? I mean, what is, there's always another side. Kevin. There's nothing.
Well, you know, certainly Trump has at least talked about doing something about prescription drugs, and they've done a little. They've done a little trimming around the edges, but haven't done anything that. You know, they've done some things on transparency that are required, and you know, I don't know what the compliance looks like at this point, but it's there. It may just be a preference for the status quo when it comes to prescription drug pricing. Remember, the more the government's involved, the more you are setting the pricing levels,
right?
And it's non-competitive, so that's out there. It could be as simple as the biggest quid pro quo in any double dealing is just access to the ear, to bend the ears that you want to bend. And that, we already know the Biden family is really good at selling access. So,
well, I mean, if you're from the South Side and all of a sudden, I've never done anything like this, but if I was in the construction business and all of a sudden I got three or four jobs from the local bartender or the local tavern owner, Tim and Kevin and Matt, they're really good at remodeling kitchens, and all of a sudden, the guy doesn't want anything for it, right? Okay, he just helped me out. And by the way, I recommend his bar and so forth. But if it's two or three really good jobs, Kevin, I have a feeling, me being a Southsider, that somebody might have the idea of, why don't we have a little Christmas party in here that costs us $500, and lo and behold, there's a $500 tip. How did that, where did that come from? I mean, there's always a mechanism. And I'm curious, what is the mechanism? I know Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post. Now, is it just Claude Rains and Casablanca that puts his finger up to the winds and he feels like they're from Vichy? You know, the winds, what do you say, Rick? The winds are blowing from Vichy, so I'm blowing with Vichy. Now, the editors just kind of know what they think he wants in there, or does he actually call somebody? Does he have somebody on his staff that says, we didn't like that editorial yesterday? I mean, Or fire Joe, we didn't like that. I mean, what is the depth? What is the mechanism? Is it just them trying to figure out what he would want in there and change it that way? Or is he actually active? Or does he have somebody who is active? I mean, why does that stuff make me curious? I mean, how involved are you?
There have been reports over the years of, like CNN as an example, saying, here's how we're going to report this presidency. So it's not... there's a decision that frames what they do.
But I guess, is that an employee? Is that the owner? I mean, why would...
It comes from the top.
Okay. I guess, I don't know who the hell the top is in those places. I'm searching for the question here, Kevin. I clearly do not have the answer. I just wonder what the mechanism is. I mean, obviously, the prescription drug people have come out with timing and everything else. If Joe Biden and Harris don't think that they were thrown a bone here by this, all Lilly and these other people, or by the people in Washington, all of a sudden the Health and Human Services guy is out and he's on this Pfizer vaccine like white on rice. Yet the report is not much different than the one from the guys 2 months ago. The 2 days later was totally poo-pooed because it was non-peer review, right? And neither is this one. I surely hope. That it's a good one, and they're
yeah. Although is this a study that gets peer reviewed? It gets reviewed, but it gets reviewed by I don't know. Is it somebody out of HHS or it's agency review, isn't it?
I'm saying that the timing of even the government employees, how quickly they're railing around this thing, really without as much as I read, I'm as hopeful as the next guy that this is a winner. But as more as I read, I don't see where people in government right now are quoting the 90% efficiency when we're talking about 64 people. It's a 44,000 person test, and there's 64 people that have got the COVID, and evidently the people who didn't get the, who got the vaccine, there's not anywhere near, well, there must be six of those. That makes it 90%, right? So it looks like, because now you're not going to give the disease to anybody. You're not going to inject anybody with it, right? So they essentially put the 44,000 people out in the population and count who and when gets COVID, right? So they're up to 64 of the placebo people that have caught it, and it must be six of the people with the vaccine that caught it. So they're saying it's 90. That's the base of 90%, the way I read it, or where am I wrong?
Yeah, what you're asking is that solid evidence?
Yeah, I'm saying it probably is. Yet I can't believe that government employees, everybody on CNBC, everybody who's now a guest, is absolutely convinced that this thing's 90% effective, and oh, by the way, very soon this is not going to be a problem. Wow, when Moderna came out with theirs, the stuff was at least as good on day one. Now, maybe we don't believe Moderna, we do believe Pfizer, maybe that's it. That could be it. But it seems like a lot of people who work for Trump are all of a sudden, there's no way this couldn't have happened 10 days ago, Kevin. There's no way. I mean, I'm just saying.
We have media who aren't expert enough to ask a lot of good questions. We've talked about this a lot. They're, you know, it's also, if you ask the wrong questions, your access gets cut off.
Well, yeah. S&P futures up 29, NASDAQ futures up 132. I think I'd make it to one Fed meeting. I don't even think I'd make it to the end of the meeting, Maddie and Kevin. Just saying. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Matt Weber, and the board is Kevin O'Neill with us. S&P futures up, where are we? Up 27.50. NASDAQ futures up 131. So we're bullish across the board here this morning. We actually opened down last night. We actually had a spot yesterday when we were down, pretty heavy in the NASDAQ. Not so much, but at least down in the S&P. And we kind of, once we got to that spot, we kind of rallied off that and, never really looked back. So maybe we've got a bottom in here in the NASDAQ. We will see, at least the short term. Dow futures up 215. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 67.5%, FTSE up 58.9%, Decoron up 25.5%. We're in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 444, that's 1.7%. Shanghai down 17.5%. Hang Seng down 74.3%. It's kind of a mixed bag over there. Well, a pretty good rally in the Nikkei yesterday. Again, we had really wacky days. Dow up 262 as these Dow stocks, everybody's celebrating the hell out of this. Boeing has got to be up 25% or 20%, and these guys have not delivered a plane yet in a year. I don't know what, or the 737 MAX anyway. I don't know how much money we're going to give those guys to keep them in business, but obviously quite a bit. S&P futures were down 5, NASDAQ futures down 160. So again, it was a mixed bag. Bonds, 0.96, again, as high as we've seen that in really since like February. Bund minus 0.50, that's creeping up towards zero, still a ways away. Japan back up to 0.04 positive, so back up near the top on that. Oil up another dollar 10, 42.46. Brent up 115, 44.76. Natural gas, 294, that's unchanged. RBOB 122. So RBOB's up 12 cents really in the last week or so. Met gold down 550, 1870. Silver down 21 cents, 24.25. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a few crashes to report that happened earlier this morning on the Eisenhower outbound just before First Avenue. There was a rollover crash that happened earlier this morning. Everything moved off to 9th Avenue, but there's still some resulting congestion with crews on the scene there. Looks like the old post office to Wolf Road is up to 18 minutes. To Route 390, it's 30 minutes. So not significant delays, but as they've moved that off to the side, but still causing a bit of a slowdown. Just west of there on the tri-state, there's a crash on the northbound side just before St. Charles Road. That accident is blocking the left lane. And then we have an issue affecting the Kennedy. The left lane is closed at Harlem Avenue on the Kennedy. This is the inbound Kennedy for a CTA Blue Line derailment that happened a little while ago.
Don't you hate it when that happened?
So that's not good. So those are the three things out west and up north. And then down southwest near Bolingbrook, we had a crash on I-55 northbound just before Illinois 53. Multiple crashes happened earlier this morning. They apparently have all cleared, but there's a lot of congestion down on the Stevenson northbound in the southwest suburbs because of those earlier crashes. Last thing to note, as it's been a crazy morning already, I-57 northbound right at the tri-state there's a crash on the ramp to the northbound tri-state, and that's causing a slowdown. So all kinds of issues no matter where you're coming in, so give yourself a little extra time this morning. Weather today, clouds early, then we'll see some sunshine later, but our streak of 70-plus degree weather is officially over, and I don't think it's coming back, Chief. Not until spring. I'll reach a high of just 47 today. Right now it's overcast and 35. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 71 today. Right now it's clear and 41. A quiet night in sports last night. In fact, none of our local teams were in action in college football or obviously NFL. But the Tony La Russa story, which we reported on yesterday, got some more detail. Just kind of embarrassing, to be honest.
He only blew 0.95. That used to be legal.
I know. I agree. I don't think, you know, it looks like he's barely over the limit, but there's a transcribing of the events that you can read online. And kind of embarrassing when he's saying, I'm a Hall of Famer baseball person. I'm legit. I'm a Hall of Famer, brother. You're trying to embarrass me. And all other things that the cop recorded, so you can read that. But that's it. Chief.
What a world, eh?
Nothing like I'm kind of a big deal to endear yourself to a lot of people.
Well, I will not mention it, the content of it, but when Duck Coach was pinched on the Tri-State coming back from the San Francisco game when they won out there, this was the beauty of the trading floor. This happened at probably midnight. At 10 o'clock, I'm reading the accident report in the OEX pit. There were no secrets, Kevin. I mean, I don't know where these guys got it, but I'm sitting there. Hey, you want to read the reaction report? Sure, why not? I got nothing else to do. Okay. It's an odd world. So how many people do you think in this country are dying to have, you know, 1,000 people at Notre Dame, like, have to quarantine after running on the field? I mean, people have
a lot of people want to say, I told you so.
Oh, are we in the net? Are we in the net or what? Now, the latest from Pritzker with all these, the increase in tests, positive tests, are that people are having too many people at home. How arrogant do you have to be to think that the reason why people get what is becoming as contagious as a common cold are become they didn't pay any attention to you. Is he your worst aunt on steroids? If you only would have wore that sweater I told you to, you wouldn't have caught that cold?
It's crazy, isn't it? So, yes, think of some of the things we talked about last week about the guidance that the state of California has put out. We've talked about state of Michigan requiring restaurants and bars and a number of other establishments to gather and save the patrons' contact information and under threat of 6 months in jail. We have, oh, what else do we have going on? I mean, you know, so many of these things. Colorado's governor just extended his mask order another 30 days. If you went and plotted the number of cases in Colorado to the mask orders, they keep going up after each mask order.
Yeah, so, the main difference.
You know, you have this mindset that says, well, it would have gone up more.
Yeah.
You got a study that says that? Got any scientific evidence behind that?
We did that for 600 years, Kevin. I just didn't bleed them enough.
Yeah. I mean, that's really where we are.
Yeah,
we're just, you know, if we did it before, it can't be stupid, so let's do more of it.
Right. If it's a, do more of the, I go back to I don't know if it's my favorite movie, but out of the 100 best movie lines, like, what, 15 of them are in Casablanca? Round up the usual suspects, and then it was round up twice the usual suspects, right? Near the end. Manny, would you have been one of the usual suspects? I'm sure Thomas would have been. What do you think?
Round up the usual suspects. A comedy troupe called the usual suspects for a while.
I didn't hear that.
Round up the usual suspects.
Which was a perfect name for them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, now the Fed is involved, and Kevin, I want to talk a little bit about, because, I mean, obviously, I listen to various stations all day regarding the market because that's my job for my people.
I'm sorry for you about that.
Oh, I know. But I mean, this whole idea of the Fed. I wonder, Kevin, I would love to. I wish I was, I'll talk to Russell a little bit here. If he had, you know, he's got guys. No, he's got guys in class that he could make, like, do research. At least they used to be able to do that for people. You were in Chicago. Like Milton Friedman and George Stigler and all those guys and Fama and those dudes. They had a troop of gnomes underneath them that were dying to get in PhD programs, and if they said research this, these guys would go to the bottom of the ocean and research it. They would do whatever they were asked, right? And do a pretty damn good job. I wonder at some point that people have heard me, you know, banter on about this, but I'll try and actually talk about what my issue is that the Fed is the Fed is charged with maintaining the money supply. They couch it in inflation and in growth, but it really is to manage the money supply and manage and to be a banker of last resort in a crisis situation. I mean, it's that if you strip away the wheat from the chaff, that's the job. So managing the money supply is not all that easy, really. But traditionally, they would buy and sell U.S. treasuries, and you had a multiplier effect. So if all of a sudden you had, you know, $1 billion too much in the market, you thought, because things were getting a little frosty, and you had a reserve requirement of 20%, the Fed could basically go in and sell $200 million worth of securities that they might have had in inventory, or the other way around, they would buy them. So you look at, they take $200 million out. But because of the multiplier effect, that was really almost like $1 billion. If you took $200 million out of bank reserves, essentially stuff in checking accounts around the country, because somebody would buy the bonds from them, and that $200 million would come out of somebody's checking account, somebody somewhere, Maddie Weber's checking account. He'd write the check, or a company wanted overnight, you know, wanted 90-day T-bills or whatever it was. But there was always if it was 90 days, 120, 6 months, a year, there was a defined time on this, but your intent was not to just have this balance sheet balloon or non-balloon. But then when you start getting into other assets, and now we're up to $7.2 trillion, and you start buying stuff that you can't control the runoff. I know if I buy 6-month T-bills, that at 6 months' time, I'm going to get the money or I'm going to roll them over, which is easy enough to do. That's what Rick Santelli and the guys are talking about every time there's an auction. People roll those over, and you just the Treasury gives you money for one, and you buy another one the same day. So the money never even comes out of the system. It just is a roll. So that's easy enough to do. When you start getting off the reservation and start buying mortgages and other corporate bonds and things like that, you really don't know. Some of that stuff might be callable. Clearly, a mortgage you can pay in advance, right? And you don't really know what the runoff is, to the point where you may have to actually be in the market every day buying crap just to maintain your system. Not just a T-bill roll, but an actual go out and buy like a new mortgage because somebody paid off the old one. So I'm wondering, Kevin, if we're reaching the point where this lady, I couldn't even stand listening to her, talking about all these different tools. They have one tool. The tool is print money. Give me a break. That is your tool, print money. And how, whatever you decide to go out and buy with it, that may change, but it all comes from the same spot, the printing press. So I wonder, Kevin, at what number, you know, if it's $7 trillion, where you have to be a buyer of so much crap, say $500 million a year. Right now they're at $120 billion a month they're buying. I wonder how much they have to do just to maintain. And if they don't, and all that money just comes sucking out of the system, is it an instant depression? I mean, if all of a sudden, I'll be brief, too late for that. Take your old savings and loan. Everybody puts deposits in the savings account, and they run out and they give a mortgage to Maddie Weber. All right, so Maddie's paying 6%, savings account's getting 3%, and the other 3% is paying for the executives, paying for the building, paying for the Little League uniforms. So Maddie sends in his check, and under 6% there. They pay all the passbook people, and they pay all that. There's a vibrancy to that. There's a circuity to it, to where every month the 6% pays the 3%, pays the salaries, pays the Little League uniforms. I mean, but then when somebody from the outside comes in and says, I'll buy all those. Now, the savings and loan, if there were any left, would actually get this big chunk of money, okay, which would, I guess would be accretive for a while because they could go out and maybe give other loans, although they couldn't give other loans that much, savings and loans, in those days. Now, it's accretive for a while, but now all this money now that Maddie sends the check in now doesn't go to the savings and loan. It goes, filters through to the Fed. So now they don't get the, quote, income. They got it in advance, but they don't have it now. So now, on a monthly basis, who's paying the 3%? Did the savings and loan save the rest of the money and then just have to pay it out of retained earnings or whatever you want to call it, out of treasury cash? I mean, the whole system seems to kind of break down to me. And when it gets higher and higher, it's not clear to me that any given time the Fed says, well, I'm just stopping, that now all of a sudden, all these 6% interest checks that Maddie Weber's sending in don't just flow through to some other place and essentially go off the grid. They go back into the ether from once they came, when the Fed wrote the check out of nowhere and it miraculously cleared. So I don't know that they have a mechanism to not disturb things on the other way. And if you get too big, Kevin, I don't know that you can, I'm not so sure you can pull it off. And I think they're there.
I mean, a piece of what you're discussing as well is the one of the things that the financial institutions have always managed, and that's the gap. So it's not just you're not just looking at that interest margin. You're looking at when things reprice, and what the gap is in those. So whether they reprice or expire or roll off, you have to know what you have to forecast out what you're going to look like in 6 months, what you're going to look like in 12, what you're going to look like in 3 years, et cetera. And what the potential is, what the risk is for having the repricing be really expensive if you need to reacquire those same funds.
Yeah, and I don't know. Obviously you're not. They would never ask me, but I'm not going to go on CNBC or Fox Business and give that story because nobody's knowing what in the hell I'm talking about. I don't think. I think our listeners have a chance at it, but. I mean, nobody talks about that anymore, Kevin. Nobody. I mean, did anybody teach any of this stuff? I mean, where do they think this money's coming from?
Hey, I've been itching to teach a money and banking course. haven't been able to stir the interest, although I do have some local financial institutions now who are interested in a in doing a program like that for as a joint high school internship and college curriculum. So maybe I'll be able to create some of that impact. Maybe I'll be able to do some of exactly what you'd like to see, is getting some people to understand how this really works.
Well, my question to you is, if I were to get my old notes, which I probably still have back when I could write and read it, from Bonello at Notre Dame and a couple of the guys over in Chicago, because I took a graduate level course at Notre Dame in money and banking, where I originally got hooked, so I guess I got him to blame. How much of that stuff is different now? I mean, if you look at like the way...
Well, probably the biggest difference in banking then and now, more than anything else, is forgetting rates and things like that are in a strange place, is simply that the idea of float has been whittled away to, you know, somewhere between nothing and hardly any.
Yep. Yeah.
So you know that with the was a technological shift. So the whole idea of how cash management works is a lot different. But other than that, I think it's the fundamentals of the industry from a balance sheet standpoint are essentially the same.
Well, I think
it may be managed differently, as we saw in the early 2000s. We saw how differently it would be managed or mismanaged, but the principles behind it are I think they're the same as they ever were.
Well, I think you would have to take clearly you'd almost want to start with a credit union, because the principles there are exactly the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you probably could make it up to a mid-level bank and probably have them be exactly the same or pretty darn close. If you could find a savings and loan, although they don't have to do 80%, was it 85% mortgages or 80, somewhere up there, you could maybe make the case for them. I honestly, Kevin, I mean, I very, very rarely, I would throw up my hands at like a J.P. Morgan or a Wells Fargo. I mean, when you have such gobs of money, where the Fed is essentially crowing about how much money you have to lose on the next crisis that they've shoved them basically up your behind. You got so much dough that you're turning around and giving it to the Fed overnight. You don't even have to loan it to each other anymore because everybody's so fat and happy on cash. I mean, what did my buddies at the Fed tell me a year ago? That the M0, which is the amount of money that banks give to the Fed overnight, which they didn't even used to do when you and I were learning this stuff. There was nothing like that. You didn't kick money back to the Fed. You essentially loan it to another bank, and that's what the federal. I mean, there is no federal fund system.
Fed funds market. Yep.
I mean, there is no Fed funds market. I mean, top four or five banks have so much cash. When you get one of these guys from the Fed on there talking about, we think that our banks are the last stress tests are perfectly capable of handling stress. So yeah, translated means they've jammed so much money up these guys behind, and the part that they're not paying each other in bonuses. There's so much there that even if we screw up again to the tune of $90 billion, there's enough money in the big four banks' balance sheet to handle it. Well, I don't know if that's a triumphant accomplishment? I mean, let me make sure that Commonwealth Edison charges you so much friggin' money every month that they got $90 billion or $100 billion sitting there that if you ever have a big-time tornado that knocks down four towers that have wires on them, they have enough money to fix it. Well, that's interesting, Kevin, right? I don't know
it is a triumph, but it's a triumph of the Wall Street infiltration of the government.
Yeah, and I guess I'm happy that, Trump in my mind, kind of lost it near the end and he was somewhat ineffective having something new, but this is not new. This group is not new, unless the Kamala Harris wing is going to take us someplace that I don't want to go, but I have no idea where we're heading here with this.
President in waiting, Kamala Harris, to you, Bud.
Yeah, and I don't.
And if I were Joe Biden, I'd have a food tester.
But I mean, I'm one of these people. As somebody, and Lou says I can't be this anymore. I'm somebody who doesn't see color, and I never have. And I really. When it comes to people working, I never had an issue with somebody's sex. I mean, I backed the first you know, Black Lady Market Maker. There were a couple of brokers on the floor, you know, 25 years ago. I thought she was ready, and I put her on a badge. I mean, she did a nice job. It was nothing like I'm doing it because she's female, or I made her wait a month too long because she was female. When she was ready, I never even looked twice, Kevin. I just never did. I mean, my mom, my grandmother, every lady I was ever involved with was bright and was aggressive and knew their stuff, and I treated Sharon like no difference. I mean, why would I? And she did a nice job, and I was proud of her, and blah blah blah. So the idea that we're so happy that we have somebody, I am happy that we have somebody who's female and of two minority descent. But that's not the point. Can you play center field or not? Right? When I put one down the middle and a guy puts a fly ball out there, can you catch the damn thing? And if the answer is no, I don't care how much I like you. If you're big fatso like me, you got no business in center field. I mean, I'm not saying she isn't, but what does all that make any difference for, Kevin? I mean, you either can do the job or not. I mean, I know that's totally politically correct in this world, but
so you're saying then that Joe Biden selected her because she can do the job? Is that what you're telling me?
No, that had nothing to do with it. but you know what? It doesn't mean that she can't grow into the job and be terrific. I mean, you know, somebody walks into the Oval Office on day one and says, "Oh my God," or wherever the vice president's office is, and says, "I better learn more in the next 60 days than I've learned in my life so far." And she might be one of those people that says, "All right, I'm letting people in here 2 hours a day, the other eight. I'm on this computer, I'm reading reports, I'm going to catch up as fast as I can." Maybe she's that person. I don't know, Kevin. Could be. You know, I hope so. But how do we know? I mean, there's nothing in the past that leads you to believe that, just like in Joe's past, there's nothing to believe there that says he's going to all of a sudden walk up to Pfizer and say, "This is all very nice, and by the way, you're cutting your prices by 30% or you're going to jail." I don't see that in his past, do you?
Nope.
Now, we could be wrong.
Because I only have a couple of minutes left here. There's one quick shift I want to make, because I'm never around on Mondays when you discuss the Bears.
The Bears.
And there's a point I'd like to make about the Bears that I don't think gets discussed very much. And it's really simple, that they have a lot of injuries. And so they have injuries, like, you know, on the offensive line as an example. Not that the offensive line was all that good in the first place, but they have injuries on the offensive line. And it's one thing if the other team beats you because they just have better players. But I've come to the conclusion that the Bears are a team full of screw-ups.
Yeah.
That it's not, you know, hey, you know, if you try to block a guy and he pushes you backwards, he's just better than you are. If you, on the other hand, don't know who you're supposed to block, so you don't block anybody, and the guy has a free path to on fourth and one to blast the running back in the backfield, that's different. If you are on, or you decide to go for fourth and one, and the guys jump, and somebody has a false start and it backs you up, or if you have an idiot who starts throwing punches at the other team,
yeah.
Why would you punch somebody in the helmet in the first place? You're only going to hurt your hand.
Yeah, that's you got to wonder about that.
And you can go on the whole litany of things that the Bears do. They are just a bunch of screw ups, and I don't know if that means. And it's mostly on offense. It's way more on offense than it is on defense. I don't know if that is reflective of a lack of leadership, poor coaching, or a combination of all of that. But I don't care if I bring somebody, if my third string lineman has to play, I don't care if he has to, if he's going to get beat. I care if he's going to just execute his assignments properly. And that's where the Bears break down.
Well, they have leadership.
They are a really, really dumb, stupid, screw up bunch.
Well, they continually spend a lot of their, other than quarterbacks, which they like to spend number one picks on, they clearly favor the defense. I mean, the difference in personnel on one side of the ball versus the other is dramatic. And that's just been their mentality since Hallis was there, for God's sake. I mean,
yeah, they go draft a quarterback in the first round or trade two first round picks for Cutler or all of those kinds of things when they do that, and then don't go get an offensive lineman for years.
Well, for a long time they had Big Cat Williams was the leader on the offense, and then it was Olin Krutz. You need internal leadership. I don't see anything on that line. What happened to the kid from Notre Dame? How did he get hurt already? Or did he have
who Mustafer?
Yeah, what happened to him?
I don't know.
But yeah, you do wonder. I mean, anyway, Kevin, we will talk about that.
I mean, it's nice when the coach can do that, but coaching leadership works best when you can lead through a good player.
Well, right now
when
the defense
you have that one good player that everybody looks at and says, I don't want to screw up because if that guy's pissed at me, I got a problem.
Yeah,
and you're right. That was an Olin Krutz or somebody like that, and they don't have that anymore.
No, nobody was going to mess with Big Cat. He's a huge man. Who's going to say screw you to Big Cat? What's the guy like 6'9", 350? Anyway, all right, Kevin, thank you very much, bud. We got to get Russell on. SP Futures up 28, NASDAQ Futures up 139. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Lord, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, just met Webber on the board. S&P Futures up 29.75. NASDAQ Futures up 143. Dow Futures up about 200 here, I think. 215. I've got every stock in the Dow that's trading early here except for Disney. Well, Disney, Visa, and Coke are down marginally, but Caterpillar's up again. We've got Boeing up again. Boeing has got to be, let me see where this is. I'll check this real quick and then we'll get to Russell, but I'll get myself a chart. A chart. I'm a big chart guy. Actually, I'm not a big chart guy, but, see, Boeing was traded, 144 on the 30th of October, and it's now 191, and I don't know that they've delivered a plane. Do you, Russell? How are you, bud?
Oh, gosh, I don't think they've delivered a plane, but, but things look positive. We're gonna make nice with China, and China buys a lot of Boeing planes, at least for the moment, and it's all gonna be good for them.
So we had a president, whether he did or he should have or shouldn't have or didn't, essentially spent 4 years describing to people, most of whom were willing to listen, and even those that were not his supporters, I think, jumped on the bandwagon a little bit, that over a period of time, we have not been treated well by China. And now all of a sudden, are we going to have somebody who says, no, they're really good guys, and we're right back in, and by the way, we have five big firms that do business over there, we're more concerned about them than we are the rest of us. Is that, are we going to buy that story? I mean, it looks like maybe we are, huh?
I think that's the belief of the market right now, that we're going to back off, and we're going to go back to the good old days of 2016.
What?
Everything's going to get reverted very quickly. I think the market's totally anticipating that, and it's very unfortunate because, we keep saying China. It's really not China. It's the Communist Party of China that fosters the misbehavior.
Well, we have people on national news that will tell you flat out that we should have handled the COVID thing like China when they're the ones that infected the whole world.
Well, yeah, but they fixed it.
Yeah.
They put everybody in a metal box that had it, and that apparently it COVID can't escape a metal box.
Right.
So,
well, and the people who survive, you walk out the front door and you go back to your slave labor job, and if you come out
exactly,
the back,
well, that's kind of where I was going with that.
Yeah, and if you get
yeah, it's great that they were able to, if we believe the numbers, that they were able to clamp down on the COVID situation, but that's because they're like your life is not your own over there.
No.
And you don't have, so yeah, if we want to be able to solve, and I kind of went off on a weird tangent where I was half making fun of our way of life probably 6 months ago, saying that, well, if we don't have the personal responsibility to do the right thing to keep this thing from spreading, then we need a government that makes us behave.
Yeah.
And that's what I was kind of, that's sort of where I was going with that. But
where do we,
I missed the mark.
I'm just kind of curious as to, we are talking about a germ, and someday, I mean, well, I guess by definition we'll all be gone. There might not be any people left, and there's going to be germs. I think they're going to outlast us.
Oh, I think they probably are, too.
And somewhere along the line, where did we get as a country that the reason why you got a cold or the flu or something is because you didn't... Now, I get the part that if I'm foolish enough to go over to China and go down one of these rivers and seize one of these caves with all the bats and stuff in there, that everybody who's got an ounce of brains wears an astronaut's outfit to go in there and pluck stuff up and find out what's brewing in there. If I just start wandering in there and poking around on the ceiling and have the stuff drop all over me, I guess I could say, boy, that chief guy's pretty stupid. No wonder he caught Ebola or something, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not exactly somewhere between there and the common cold where it's just out there. There's differences, and somehow or another, people are convinced that anybody who gets, even now, where the positive tests are going off the chart, people can't even figure out where they got it. Even now, people are saying, if you just would listen to me, you'd have been okay. We would have had no cases if you just would have all stayed on the mountaintop and we send you your sub sandwich up there.
You know, and I mean, different countries did different things as well, and only a couple. And I'm just not going to believe the. I'm not going to believe the communist China numbers.
No,
but apparently Singapore did very well. But I can tell you, when you're in Singapore, you are being watched every moment of every day by cameras. And they said they basically said, stay home, don't leave the house, and if you do, you're going to get in a lot of trouble. And they have that. They have that same ability.
But part of that, and part and parcel of that is, and I have people that were here in the office that had it here in April and May, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And part of the modus operandi in April and May was, if you were at home and you thought you had it and you called your doctor, the doctor would say, by the way, what's your fever? If it wasn't over 100, they'd say, just stay home. You're going to be okay. I don't want you coming here because, by the way, there's other people here that don't have it. I don't want you giving it to them. We essentially told people to not go anywhere to get tested in April. So we have no idea whether or not the staying at home part, how many people had it at home. Now, in some of the neighborhoods, where you have multi-generational families. A lot of those are African-American, a lot of those are Hispanic, where grandpa mm-hmm. and grandma are living at home with everybody. You obviously had a problem with the older people there. The deaths in those areas, especially in the black community, were a lot higher. But the mm-hmm. white people, they got all their, now this is the generalization, they got all their old people in nursing homes. And guess what? There was a problem in the nursing home. But if you count the person in the nursing home just like they were part of your family or my family, like they would be in the black community or Hispanic community, the numbers are probably the same. Right?
I was, yeah.
So, I mean, it's just a question of how you look at this crap. I mean, you can't, you know, if somebody, the bottom line is, for a long period of time and even now, if somebody is over 75, 80 and they get COVID, it's a really bad thing. That's been like that mm-hmm. since February. Okay, now, in some ethnic areas, that person's more likely to be living at home. In some areas, that person's more likely to be in a, I won't say nursing home, an assisted care facility. Uh-huh. And then you got a governor whose family owns a bunch of these places and says the solution is to not have anybody visit anybody. Well, all those people in those places didn't die from guests coming in with it. It came from employees, right?
Yeah, the people that worked there.
And yet now, do you really want a guy who runs nursing homes telling people you can't visit somebody? Because I tell you what, if you have an advocate, if you show up, even at the veterans home, they were the best people on earth. The best people on earth. I mean, I can't say enough for them. I still, whenever anybody has clothes or anything, I gather them up in my Suburban, I drive down to Manteno, and I bring two and three people's stuff down there, you know, as best I can. And there's people on the show that donated TVs and everything down there when I told them they didn't have TVs. I mean, I can't say enough nice for them. Yet even there, they knew the people that had guests. I mean, they didn't treat my stepfather, I don't think, any better than anybody else. My brother and I were there 3 days a week. And I'm going to say, mm-hmm. I knew a couple people from the neighborhood. A guy, Nick Saviano, is the nicest guy. He ended up there. And his daughters would go maybe 4 days a week because he was unable to feed himself, and they would feed him. And they mm-hmm. were terrific family, terrific people. Now, I'm going to say, with the exception of them, we probably were there more than anybody. And we were on first-name basis with everybody in the place. Now, but I mean, Audrey came down with me and a couple times, and she brought her little dog. And little Rosie, those Japanese chins, they got the pushed-in nose, and they're as big as not much, but they absolutely think that they're 10 feet tall.
Well, yeah,
they're absolutely convinced they're royalty. She was hopping on these guys. These guys hadn't had a smile in ages, because my stepfather was not Alzheimer's, because I never went down there. They said, don't even go in there, you want to look. But, you know, where people are eating the tablecloth and stuff. He was not in that group. It was just a circulatory problem where the guys were out of it, but they weren't Alzheimer's type of thing. And and I tell you what, she got more smiles in 2 hours than you ever saw somebody bring to a room. Because she was not shy. Somebody would look at her and she'd hop up in her lap and, like, you know, I'm here. Come take care of me. And just lit everybody up. And anybody who does that stuff where you bring dogs to these places and stuff, it lights the whole room up, especially with kids, too. I mean, so there are tremendous people in this world. I'm saying that place, everybody was clean. Nobody smelled. The beds were all clean. I mean, I can't say enough good about it. And yet, mm-hmm. who knows if it would have been as good if nobody could have come over and go in and see the place. You know, I mean, I don't think, how could it be?
Oh, no, I think if people are keeping an eye, if you know the ultimate customers, the ones that are paying for somebody to be there, I guess, or showing up, of course you're going to, make sure things are going well.
Well, when can we, I don't know, listening to the Fed people yesterday, am I off the chart when I say I want all their resignations?
No, probably not.
How much are they willing? With the market starting to head south a couple days last week, and actually a couple of one day this week, we turned down pretty heavy. When there's $7 trillion into their game, and they're telling you it's the best job any Fed's ever done. This guy Druckenmiller was on the other day, and he comes up with some stuff. I mean, I don't know what his politics are or whatever. He said the Fed has put more money in the system in the last 6 months than they did the entire 9 years under Bernanke and Yellen. Now, is there any chance, Russell? My question is, not if they're $7.2 trillion down this road, if they see the market falling apart, even for a uh-huh. 2-day period, Is there any hesitation on their part to throw another $400 billion at it and say, we got to prove we're right?
Oh, gosh, no. I don't think there's any hesitation whatsoever. They're just going to keep doing what they have to do. And, the situation that keeps that kind of hovers around in the back of my mind is the British pound thing that Soros made an awful lot of money off of, where the British government or the UK kept supporting the pound, and it just reached a point where they didn't have the ability to do anything else to support it, and it fell apart. Yeah. And that's what I wonder if we're going to end up having a great reckoning around, things being financially propped up here.
Well, the people who have stocks,
the stock market starts to sell, the financial markets start to have a little bit of crisis, and they throw another trillion at it or whatever, and it doesn't even stop a downtrend.
Well, we saw.
And then you're like, holy crap!
But with the Weimar, they managed to keep the market up the whole way. Venezuela has, and their currency, Iran has.
Oh yeah. But the ability to feed your family became a real problem.
Well, we're willing to work. We have history. Mm-hmm. The Weimar is the easiest one. They eviscerated their population in a bold attempt to, by the way, that worked, to renegotiate their war settlements with Britain and France.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically torpedoed their currency and their citizenry to that end. And I believe right now that somebody in Washington has decided that we're going to debase our currency because 5 years or 10 years from now, when we pay people back the bazillions of dollars we owe them, we're going to be paying them back with currency worth half as much. I mean, that clearly is somebody's theme.
I don't think they are being as straightforward about it as you just said.
Why?
I don't think they're saying, I think they realize that we're going to have to pay our debts. We'll pay our debts at some point in the future, and that a dollar today is worth less than, a dollar in the future is worth less than it is today, and that we probably will have a bout of inflation that definitely, makes it easier for us to pay back what we owe right now. But I don't think they're being the evil guy on Rocky and Bullwinkle, twisting their evil-looking mustache and laughing about that kind of situation.
Well, I just
I don't think they're thinking about it as nefariously as you make it sound.
But here's the drill, in my opinion. Somebody called up yesterday and said, "How many times did you say here's the deal?" Because I had a buddy from college. Actually, he was head of the student body for a year, and I
drink every time you say it,
and that's
why I never get anything done on Wednesday.
In every four sentences, he'd either say, "Now look it," or "Here's the deal." You end up picking up on the what's it when your face tweaks, your tweaks or your twerks or whatever. Anyway, but I think you and I, maybe me more than you because you have a broader base than I do, it might get stuck in my monetarist theory, is if you have somebody and Social Security, all right, and they're making $2,000 a month, which is, I guess, where most people are. I don't know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you're making $2,000 a month. And you say, geez, we can't afford all the Social Security. You can either say, Russell, by the way, your mom or your dad, if he's still alive, or uncle or whoever the hell, your grandfather, I don't think your grandfather's still around. You're either going to cut Pops to $1,500 next year, which would give you the entire hue and cry of a generation that still votes, that has a lot of lobbyists and is willing to pay for them through ARP and other people. You don't want to fight that fight, right? But now in the next 5 years, I can say, well, you know what? We're going to give Pops a 1.3% raise per year, yet we're going to increase the money supply by 10%. And we're going to have and we know prescription drugs, the announced number is 5.3% a year, and that doesn't count any of the BS with the generic that used to be $10, it's now $150, right? We don't count, we're not even counting that. We're talking about the announced, And now we're doing that, and we look at the price of a roof versus 2 years ago. We look at the price of a car versus 5 years ago. It's much easier to actually give pops the 1.3% raise and say you're doing them a favor. Meanwhile, you degrade that by 20% over the next 3 years. It's much easier to pull that off on somebody than it is to just cut it by 20%. It gets you the exact same place. Now, you and I know that. Why does 90% of the population, it flies over their head like if it's a mosquito heading for me?
Oh, and I you say 90%, I think it's probably 99% of the population doesn't realize it.
I mean, isn't it the exact same thing?
It is the exact same thing. There's no question in my mind that one way or another, the ability to buy more stuff is getting, it's becoming more difficult. It's going to become more difficult. We're going to have, we've talked about this multiple weeks. We're going to have another big bout of inflation, and it's not going to be, it's going to be kind of like what happens when the stock market has a correction. It's going to be a violent spike up. And, a lot of people, most folks are going to be, where the heck did that come from?
Well, and I went back.
The real problem is, I don't think that I don't think that we have the ability to do anything about that one.
When you say we, who's we?
I don't know. The financial system in general.
Well, I think
the bad guys in Washington D.C. twirling their mustache.
Well, you have to have somewhat of a motivation on what you're accomplishing. You can't. I don't think you need to manipulate. This COVID's a bad deal, right? It's not a good. We're way better off. It didn't come here. It's eviscerated virtually everybody who owns their own business, right? And the difference between the people that are still working at home and whatever, and still on a paycheck, what their numbers are showing the government, or what the government's showing you, the difference in that group versus the group that is self-employed or 1099 employed or own their own place where their income is essentially their profit. I'm going to say that group is down 35% this year. I mean, with the amount of people that are out of business, the cleaners, the bars, those kinds of places that are just plain out of business, the restaurants. And even look at all the people that are, I think, contract people that set up stuff at McCormick Place. They haven't gotten a dime in a year now, right? Or 8 months, 9 months?
Probably not.
So
you think the union dues they paid, that they're going to, that they've been getting something out of that?
Some, yes. Some probably are contractors. Some probably aren't. Some might be. I mean, they might get some kind of union. It's been so long since I was in the Teamsters. It was 45 years ago. But, I don't know how that works. But I'm saying that wherever you want to look, you can look and find different numbers here. But someplace, somewhere, somebody is saying that we're putting enough money in the system at the danger of inflation to where the stock market is equal or above when COVID started. Yet we don't care necessarily about the person whose business is out, that he's in the same place he was last March. This, whoever decided that the stock market, and maybe Trump did this, probably not, probably just rich people in general, whoever decided that the stock market, was the thing we had to keep up under all, and the genius of it was, somebody did this, the genius of it was, let's get people to have 401ks, so they think and act like rich people, so that so we don't care if they no longer make enough money to make ends meet, if we can run the market up and we don't care how narrow it gets or anything, so that their 401ks quote go up, they'll be happy. I mean, it's really something bizarre when you think about it.
They're just trying to make sure people feel wealthy.
Yeah, I mean. In my day, when I was a kid anyway, not my day, but I mean, you made money, your wealth grew when you made $100 a week, you lived on 80 and you put 20 in a bank. That is so far afield.
What you're supposed to do.
That's so far afield now. No, now it's, you somehow get a job where you can pay the mortgage and you, you flip a house to make the extra dough, or you buy Apple, or you buy, you know, whatever, Tencent or whatever the hell it is, or Snap. You know, that's how you, that's how, without even looking at the fact of the amount of money lost in the GMs and the places that went bankrupt in the last 50 million, or nobody was in those, right? Nobody had Kmart, nobody had Sears, nobody had GM, nobody had Citigroup, nobody had Bear Stearns, right? We totally washed that out of the collective memory, right?
Yeah.
So the idea being is, you know, and that's why, and one of the reasons why that I, for my clients, I pretty much stick in indexes. Because I don't want to buy the Sears that looks good to me that 2 years from now is bankrupt because somebody was doing something I had no way of knowing he was doing. So I pretty much stick to indexes. I mean, I do it out of fear for my people. I don't want to pick. I mean, we're not talking about schlump stocks here. I mean, we're talking about Lucent, you know, which was the most widely held stock, followed probably by GE, which was going from...
That's exact one I was getting ready to throw out there. Plus, I mean, you mentioned Boeing's been up 50 points lately, but, you know, they had their own issue. They had their own company-specific issues, so.
How much?
No, I think indexes are really the way to go. The problem with putting, and I'm not criticizing your method, but what ends up being a side effect of it is money flows into companies that probably don't deserve it.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I'm not saying it's not flawed. And would I rather be in the SPY and make, you know, who knows, say 8% next year? Or would I rather be in, a cruise company that all of a sudden goes from like, you know, $20 back to 150? Well, I'd rather be in the cruise company if I could figure out which one was going to be the winner. Right? Duh.
Yeah, but you didn't want to be in the cruise company, you know.
Right,
February of this last year.
Right,
yeah. I think getting rid of all of that, unsystematic company specific risk. There's a lot to be said for that.
And but you also don't. Yeah. You don't get the home run. Right,
that's true. You get a small benefit of the home run, and what makes it difficult in your situation is people want to know why you weren't in the home run.
Oh yeah. Why
didn't you own this thing? They said it was up 80% since July on CNBC.
Well, I've never had a more difficult time with that. Yeah. And now that especially I'm doing stuff for a lot of other different firms, or a couple different firms, where people will say, you're up X in a protected program, which actually was a pretty darn good year, and for what I'm doing. And they say, well, look at the market's up 25%. I said, no, you're talking... Five stocks are up 25%. By the way, the Russell's actually like down, even with the big run up it's had, is like down on the year. You know, what if you're in Russell? Well, yeah, but I wouldn't be in Russell. I'd be in the Qs. Well, no, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm saying. So it's all about what part do you look at? I mean, it gets very difficult. I mean, clearly, if Amazon were to double here, well, I mean, look, for God's sake, we should have been in Amazon. Would you have been happy if I put you in Amazon? Well, no. I thought it was too high then. Well, okay. I mean, what are we really talking about? So that's why the indexes, I think in some ways, you know, depending on, especially if you're retired or whatever, I don't know that you want somebody taking, I mean, you could have bought Zoom and made a huge home run, but what if you bought it 5 days ago? You know,
or if you hadn't sold it yet.
Right. So, I mean, it's, yeah.
But you
can tell somebody stocks, and I'm not going to go. I mean, I don't give people stock advice because I don't know enough about these companies. But it's starting to remind me of 2000 when we're talking, you know, 80, 90, 100 times revenue. I mean, I've mentioned this before. When I came out of the OEX and started doing money management for people upstairs because we had so much call for that. Plus, the OEX was falling apart. It was time. So I came upstairs and started managing people's money. And I looked at some of these stocks and I'm going, gee, I mean, I see Cisco trading, you know, $65 and they're 30 times revenue. I'm like, wow, we're not even talking about earnings. We're talking about revenue. Their revenue was, might have been 30. I think their revenue was 450. So it was whatever, 15 times, 14 times earnings revenue. I mean, I'm like, so people are like, how come people sold the Cisco down? I go, God, boy, you don't want to do this in a room full of a bunch of people who's lost money on it. But I said, you know, did you guys ever really look at, the fundamentals of the stock. What do you mean?
Hey, you know what they actually do?
I didn't want to go that far. And I said, you know, the revenue was like $5. They were earning, they were making like 20 cents. I mean, the thing's trading 60. Does that give anybody pause? What do you mean? It was going up. It's the number one stock in the new something something, whatever. And, I mean, today it's 39, right? And it was, how many people, you know, forget the thing was 65 in 2000, right? I mean, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, those stocks, the ones that people wanted, that people would have gotten on to you about back with the internet boom, they still haven't recovered.
The only one it has is Microsoft.
IBM actually did, but it's come off since. Because they changed their focus.
All right, correct me if I'm wrong. The fangs back then were Oracle, Intel, Cisco, Microsoft, and I believe Dell were the five.
Yeah, those are the
Microsoft.
They were the NASDAQ 100 version of, you know,
the fangs.
What do we have now? You know, Google, Amazon.
Yeah, those were
Facebook,
the ones.
Facebook. You know,
and
stocks.
And
yep,
Microsoft for years was $35 after being like 60, but Oracle never got. Who knows about Dell, because the guy took it private at like a fifth of the price, right? It was trading at 60, and he took it private.
He took under for himself.
Yeah, at 10, and now it's back out there trading higher. But I don't. So you can't count that one. So the only one who's actually up on the double decade is Microsoft, which doesn't mean. It doesn't mean I'm predicting that for these guys, but I mean it is history. I mean it's not like how many years did railroads, you know, trade higher than they did 30 years later? I mean that happened all the time in the 19th century, right?
Yeah, and you know I think the most disappointing stock like that back then was Apple.
Oh yeah, well then it made its recovery.
I mean they were like at $2.
Yeah, what a nice buy, huh? Wow, S&P futures up 29, Nasdaq futures up 140. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Well, North Bay, Stocks and Jocks. Sometimes I always miss Matt Weber. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes. Was Maddie, while I'm doing this, you can think for a minute. Who the hell is Denny Avdija?
I don't think I've ever heard that name.
The guy that everybody wants the Bulls to draft. He's somewhere from Israel, and he's supposedly as good as Dallas Mavericks star Luka Doncic, whoever the hell he is.
He's one of the best players in the world.
Right.
Yeah, so let's see. Denny... Yeah, Avdija, small forward. It looks like he's projected anywhere between 4 and 7. The Bulls are drafting number 4. So that's a possibility.
The Bulls got a pretty good pick.
Yeah.
Is that theirs, or did they get them from somebody else?
It's theirs. They're that bad.
Well, when they obviously they're right in the lottery.
That's right, firmly, and have been for several years in a row.
As you say, accusingly. Anyway, Dow futures up 209. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 69.5%. They were up a little more earlier. FTSE up 61.9%. CAC around up 32.6%. Over in Asia, pretty good move out of the Nikkei up 444. That's 1.8%. Shanghai down 18.5%. Hang Seng down 74.3%. Bonds, 10-year 0.96, itching to get to that one percentage point number. That'll be interesting. The first time in probably a year. Bund minus 0.51. Japan positive 0.04. Oil up another dollar, 42.38. They were just 37, 36 like 5 days ago. Brent up a buck, 44.66. Natural gas, 2.94 unchanged. RBOB, 121, up another 2 pennies. Gold is now down 840, 1868. It was 1925, like not very long ago, before this, the drug rally started. Silver down 28 cents, 24.18. Copper down 2 cents, 3.13. Maddie, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have an accident on the northbound Tri-State just before East St. Charles Road that's blocking the left lane on the northbound side of I-294. The ramp for the outbound Eisenhower is also heavy and affected, so slow travel times on the northbound Tri-State. Expect delays as crews work to get that crash clear. No issues on the outbound Kennedy, but on the inbound Kennedy, there's still that left lane closure. It looks like at Harlem because CTA crews are in the shoulder with a blue line derailment that they're working on that happened earlier this morning. So that still has some congestion going through the Kennedy near Harlem on the inbound side because of that left lane closure, so keep that in mind. Once you get past that, the Kennedy opens up and is not too bad. No issues on the Eisenhower. Stevenson is all clear. Southside expressways have looked good all morning. Same for Lakeshore Drive. So that's good news. And everything else is quiet out there. Weather today, clouds early. Much cooler than it's been, about 30 degrees cooler, as we'll reach a high of 47. Could see some sunshine this afternoon, but again, much cooler. Right now it is overcast and 36 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 71 today. Right now it's clear and 42. In sports, we talked about the Tony La Russa police report that was released. You can find that on our Twitter. We tweeted that out. It's kind of embarrassing for the recently hired White Sox manager. But after a quiet night, there's not much else going on. Tonight, there will be something on TV, though, as NIU is back in action. Week 2 of MAC football. They'll host Central Michigan tonight from DeKalb. That's a 7 p.m. kickoff, and that will be televised on ESPNU. Chief.
You know, there used to actually be people, I don't know if they have any more, the railroad's so big and there's only 4 or 5 of them left, but there used to actually be people that were called re-railers. That when cars were, when stuff derailed out in the middle of, you know, God knows nowhere, you'd call these guys and they'd bring out this huge heavy equipment and, they'd put stuff back on the railroad and get it going somewhere. And it was, those guys made an absolute fortune when you needed them.
Was it like John Henry? Like, yeah. Like big guys?
Well, I mean, they had, essentially big railroad cars with cranes and stuff, and they could pick these things up and drop them back on the rail.
Wow.
And it was,
Yep.
And the, talk about one of the major screw-ups. Of course, it just happened in Washington. How could that possibly be, Russell? When you build a railroad car, okay, and especially a, like a CTA car, you see all the equipment on the bottom of the car, right? Well, if the car drops off the rail, okay, it should be, you know, on the ties, I mean, at worst, on the stones, the roadbed, right?
Yeah.
Well, the distance between the ties and the equipment under the car, the really expensive equipment, meaning the air conditioners and all the other stuff, should be a little greater than the height of the rail, right? So even if you flop off onto the ties, you still shouldn't wreck the underside of the car. Make sense?
That's the idea, to save the good part.
Well, the people who did the original, what do they call it, the Metra in Washington? Whoever designed the cars kind of bleeped that up, and he was sort of an inch or two short. So whenever they derailed, it totally obliterated all your... And I don't know if they brought them all in for retrofit as the years went by and fixed it, but for a while, if the thing derailed, it just destroyed the air conditioners and all the other stuff underneath, all your transformers. There's a lot of stuff in the bottom of a car. So they managed to screw that one up, and they somehow or another in Washington, they took delivery of them anyway. Not sure why, but they did.
By the way, Washington, it's the Metro.
Metro.
Yeah, we're the Metro.
It's the Metro.
We're
yeah,
the Metro.
Apparently, there's so many problems with the Metro, it's possible they may have to rebuild the whole thing.
Not surprising. You know what they're...
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing a news story about that like a year ago or so, there's just so... either it hasn't been kept up or it was built so poorly that they're probably going to have to go redo the whole thing.
Well, I mean, the roadbeds? Yeah. Or what are we talking about?
I don't know. You know more than I... You know, of course, I just threw that one out there at you, but apparently there are enough issues that there's some fixing that needs to be done. How's that?
Wow. Well, they do
a lot of fixing. Like, they're going to have to shut down whole lines for a long period of time to redo things.
Well, then remember when they shut...
And it might relate to what you're talking about.
Well, remember the cable cars? They had to shut those down for, what, like 2 years to redo the whole system?
Yeah. I mean...
The Metra is the only one that has... the only one that I know of. I've never ridden the BART. But, Maddie, when you go somewhere, I don't know if you've been out there on them, but you have to put your card in twice. Because they charge you. They charge you for how far you went. So if you get on it like 63rd and Ashland, say, and when you put your card in, and if you get off at 47th Street, you put it in again, and it charges you from riding from Ashland to 47th Street.
Charged by the zone.
And I guess if you don't put it in, they
do
must
that in London too.
I guess if you don't put it in again, they charge you all the way to Howard then, right, or something. They must.
They fine the crap out of you if you don't do it in London.
Well, why would they,
they do that? They overcharge you if you don't do that.
Why wouldn't they just charge you to the end of the line?
I think that's what they do.
Yeah, I mean,
I know that there are some exits where you don't even go through a turnstile. They just expect you to, bump your card against something and saying, "I'm here."
Well, talk about a way to keep track of your people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's exactly how Haven't you ever watched any of the crime TV shows?
Yeah.
They can get somebody's, subway card and say, well, they got on here and they got off there, and now we know that they weren't in that neighborhood, so they're innocent.
Well, how many divorce cases...
unless they lift the thing out to somebody else. So.
Well, how many divorce cases is some of the evidence, people's cards for the easy pass on the tollway, which was originally supposed to be kept for 60 days and destroyed? Gee, what's with this Matty Weber getting off in Huntley every Tuesday morning at 11 o'clock? What the hell is he doing out in Huntley? Type of thing. So that, it's been...
Matt, who do you know in Huntley?
No one.
He's not in Huntley.
Okay, good. And you stick with that story.
That's your story, and sticking to it. what my buddy Doc told me one night, he piled in, lady was drunk. I said, what do you do? He says, he came in about 4, he went on the sofa downstairs. His wife spotted him, said, I was here at 1 o'clock. It's my story, and I'm sticking to it. There you go. There you go. All right, so we have, for whatever reason, everything is right with the world, and we have a steady stream of people in the Fed telling me how much they still got to keep goosing the economy. So, yet we know everything's not right with the world. If we don't get another stimulus, it's interesting. I don't know if you heard this or not, Russell, but the stimulus package, this is how our bureaucracy has gotten. Because I just had to go over this with my accountant, because I had read an article a couple weeks ago, I don't know if you were on, and I couldn't believe it, that if you were one of these firms that got money from the PPP, or the Paycheck Protection Program, the intention of Congress was that to be, I guess I'll use the term, free money. If you played ball, if you paid people for those few months, it was intended to be a bridge between essentially May till the end of July, right? It was a, I'll say a 10-week period that you were supposed to pay your people. And if you did, then they were going to forgive the debt, correct? Was it 85% had to go to salaries or 80, something like that? You could pay a rent check if you had to. The IRS got hold of it and said, well, they couldn't possibly have meant that. That can't be right. So what they said is they wrote the regs that if Russell Inc. got $500,000 and you paid, you know, $450 out in salaries, that now this year those salaries you paid with that money are not tax deductible. Which is exactly what Congress did not intend. So one of the big bitches that people have with Congress not getting this thing together by the end of this year is that's one of the fixes in the bill. For them to say, no, you dumb bleeps at the IRS, this is exactly what we meant. Basically get rid of that reg. But the old bill, evidently, it's not strong enough or not clear enough to where they can say that, so they wanted to make it in the new bill. So now, if that doesn't happen until next year, even if they make it retroactive, depending on when they do it, you could conceivably have to pay taxes on that, you know, for like your April or whatever the hell the corporate deadline is, I should know, and then maybe get the money back next year, which is a total goat bleep, right? And this is our bureaucratic system working for us, right? Well, they couldn't have meant that. We can't just give that money to people. We got to figure out a way to take it back. It's got to be income somehow. And now that's what the deal is. So if there's no, of course, Congress, they can't possibly, allegedly on both sides of the aisle, they feel this way. They can't possibly put through a one or two page bill. And you say, no, you bleeps at the IRS. This is what we meant. And just have the president sign it. We could never have like a two page bill that just clarifies.
Oh, gosh,
something.
No.
Now my question is, why is that? Why can't they just do that? What is wrong with these people?
Well, I almost feel like it's when you go work somewhere, you go work somewhere and you say, hey, why don't we try XYZ? And they say, well, we're not going to try that because we've always done it the other way.
Right.
And I almost feel like, going all the way back to 2008, the original bill to bail out the banks and everything was only like two or three pages long. And I remember somebody in Congress actually said, we can't pass something that's only two or three pages long. You know, they had to start adding on a bunch of stuff to it. And I feel like that's why, I feel like you can't, I feel like we've had this discussion before where you can't do, there's no way you can do business in the United States without breaking some law somewhere, because there's so many of them.
Right.
Not nefariously, but just because that's the way, you know, that's how much regulation there is in, you know, on the books.
And you end up becomes very political. We'll go after the people I want to go after.
But you would think a correction like that, at minimum, they would be able to, you know, put in a correction and say, this is taxable, this is not taxable.
Hey,
period.
Can we shift to sports? We got a few minutes. I just was sent from Mr. Kevin. The Irish basketball schedule this year, which I think is 27 games, and they're trying to figure out if they're going to stagger season ticket holders, let some people in or not, or just let the friends and family. Where is Loyola on this? I don't think you're speaking out of school. Are they planning on having a season?
We are planning on having a season, last I heard. But, you know, that's always up to the conference. Now, how many people with the cool scarves we let in, I don't know. But
there's
in the Missouri. They're in the Missouri Valley. Is that office? Is that Kansas City or St. Louis? Or
my guess would be St. Louis, but I have no idea. If I was on Final Jeopardy, I would guess St. Louis. But St. Louis, Missouri.
If you were on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You'd get your phone call, and you'd call Matty Weber, and he wouldn't know either. He's supposed to know all this stuff.
Well, I know they played their
tournament. And he uses the Google.
I know they played their tournament in St. Louis because they called Arch Madness, which I've always thought is pretty good.
Yeah.
So I figured the office was there, but I wasn't sure.
And it's fun, and it's competitive. It really is.
Well, it's a great conference.
Kind of fun. Yeah. A bunch of schools that don't really have football.
It was better when they had Creighton and Wichita State and some of those other really good programs that left for bigger conferences, but it's still a really good conference.
Was there ever any thought of them being in the Big East, because there's no football there?
I would love if Loyola moved to the Big East, but I have a funny feeling that there's a team in Chicago that would never allow that.
Why? Why wouldn't you want to have two? I think it'd be pretty neat.
I don't think DePaul wants, I just don't think DePaul would want to share the neighborhood.
Well, they're not doing so.
Look, I went to Memphis, and Memphis is surrounded by, Ole Miss is 90 miles down the road. Vanderbilt's up the road, and I know it sounds funny when people say this out loud, but Memphis always, it felt like if they could get themselves together, maybe they could try to get the SEC to let them in. No way in hell University of Tennessee or Ole Miss would let Memphis in. Even if they were a Boise State and always fielding a great football team and everything else. You don't want to share the neighborhood.
Is there a lot of money at Ole Miss?
Yes.
There was a
There are people that own very, very nice condos and use them five times a year to go to football games.
The reason why I asked,
there's a ton of money down there.
There was,
and if you're rich and stupid, that's where you end up going to college. I'm dead serious, man. I even had somebody who, woman that my father dated. Two of her daughters were pretty bright. The other one, she goes, not so bright. So that one ended up going to Ole Miss, and now she's a flight attendant.
There's always
the other two are like a dentist and a doctor, I think.
The other two went to what, like Vanderbilt or something?
Vanderbilt, yeah. Vanderbilt and Sewanee, I think.
There's always like a school that is for people that have means that can't quite get in the school that other people have means want to go. For a long time, it was everyone to go to the University of Virginia, and the people who couldn't get in all went to Richmond. So you had a boatload of people from like the North Shore went to Richmond for whatever reason. And then it became a lot of the people from Latin and some of those places. If you couldn't get in the Ivy League, you went to Tulane because you could still get into Tulane. And it's a pretty good school.
People refer to Vanderbilt in where I grew up in that same manner. But I feel like Vanderbilt, I somebody calling Vanderbilt a safety school. Kind of just not in my mind.
Well, it was in the sense that, matter of fact, one of our contributors to the show, a couple of his kids go there, and of course, if you listen to him, it's 10 times better than Harvard. But by and large, it was, if you couldn't get in the Ivy League, Vanderbilt's a terrific school, and it was a fallback position, right? It was, if you couldn't get in Northwestern, I'm going to say maybe Notre Dame, University of Chicago, but couldn't get Northwestern, University of Chicago, Ivy League, Stanford. Vanderbilt was like one of the next levels, right?
Oh, yeah. Vanderbilt, Duke, SMU, really, really good schools.
And for a long time, Vanderbilt gave one of the best, maybe still does, one of the best, what do you want to call it, sharing money type things. They have a huge endowment. It's Carnegie, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, Vanderbilt.
It's Vanderbilt.
Yeah, it's the name Vanderbilt, duh. Who is buried in Grant's tomb? Who wrote the Monroe Doctrine?
but they still. I was gonna let that one go.
Oh God!
Real quickly there.
Well, I used to watch.
Since the school came up, you want to know what the worst decision of the 20th century in higher education was? Whoever decided Tulane should quit the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah.
They were an SEC school.
They were.
Yes, I know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they chose to de-emphasize sports and emphasize academics. But yeah, Tulane dropped out of the SEC. They chose to.
Why did University of Chicago drop out of the Big Ten?
Same thing. They
probably the same mentality.
Got de-emphasize it. Football.
That's crazy.
Yeah. In fact, talking about the stealing a name. The Monsters of the Midway, that was University of Chicago. It wasn't the Bears.
I knew that.
Yeah, I knew that because they've got the big wide boulevard down there.
Yeah, the
I think University of Chicago might still have the most Big Ten championships or something crazy like that, or they're like top three at least.
We know who's got the by far who has the most NCAA championships.
UCLA.
In basketball?
Football.
Oh, in football?
Oh, in football.
Is it University of Chicago?
I thought you meant all sports.
Not even close. It's like 20-some. Yale.
Oh, Yale, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, because they won like every year from like 1880 to 2000 or something, or to 1900.
Oh, you're talking about conference championships?
No,
like national championships.
National championships in what?
Football.
Oh, just football.
Okay. I was going to say maybe Army won like 15 or 20 of them too back in the day, but
I don't know, not as many as those guys. But I guess we have. What are the pitfalls between them? We have the volatility going down by the day, the VIX, the implied volatility.
As it should be.
What are the pitfalls between now and none of the issues are resolved. The idea of people being broke, the downtown Chicago is not writing a mortgage check this week, are they? Or are they?
Probably not.
We don't have that much time, but here's what I wanted to ask you is when you have a normal world, okay, which we have had from time to time, again, I you know, talk about this a lot, is that you have your people that are working, your people who's are in the establishment survey, you have people that, you know, 500,000 people went back to work last week and so forth. But outside of that, you have a massive amount of people that own their own businesses, people that are carpenters, people that do those kinds of things. And when the economy is going good, there's always a spread between if the three of us decide to build two new houses on spec, and all of a sudden we got 10 guys working for us full time. Nobody knows that they're working for us until the end of the year. Like the 1099 comes in, right? I mean, you might see a little bit in the household survey if you happen to call their house, and the wife says, "Yeah, the guy's working," or the husband says, "The wife's working." But by and large, there's this kind of spread. When things are going good, they're actually going better than they're going. When things are going lousy, they're going worse than. I read some stuff last week, Russell, where whoever came up with this number was like $60 trillion is the pass off from the baby boomers to the next generation. And how many of the baby boomers are in the period of the age from 58 to 70? And how many of those people own their own businesses, whatever they are? Well, they're not all bars and restaurants, but they're smaller businesses, and how by this lady's, and I should get to her name, estimation, a full 25% of those now have gone under, and that like 20 to 25% of the $64 trillion is gone in the last 8 or 9 months. That is such a different story than talking about the people coming back to work every month that I think it can almost overwhelm it. But how would anybody ever even find out? Can we just ignore that forever, or what?
I don't know how you accumulate, or I mean, are there bankruptcy numbers that we could look at?
That's what they basically were talking about.
I think that's what you.
Well, the bankruptcy's not there yet because people are still on the. They're basically draining their savings and everything to hang in there,
thinking that we're gonna.
Yeah.
That the cure is around the corner,
right? Or somebody just declares something that we're cured, even though we're not, right?
Yeah.
It's just
time to get back to, you know, and to a little bit to his defense and defense of other world leaders that have said, let's try to get, you know, the economy up and running. The lingering effects of this may be worse than, you know, the original COVID.
I would say that in a
I don't know what the number, I don't know if they keep the numbers anywhere, but I remember back in the 2008-2009 time frame, it seemed like at least once a month somebody out here in the western suburbs was stepping in front of a train.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be happening. I mean, well, right now it doesn't seem to be happening as much, but that's a health response to, or a mental health response or whatever, response to the world falling apart back in 2008.
Well, we don't have as many trains, and people forgot about them. Nobody's riding them.
Yeah, I know. I can hear them, but
yeah.
I'm not allowed on them.
Oh, good. All right, we got a dash, Russell. Thank you very much. S&P Futures up 24. NASDAQ Futures up 115. Looks like we're to the moon here. We're not to the moon. We got a positive morning. I'll be back tomorrow with Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer? I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.